A voice says, "Cry out." And I said, "What shall I cry? All men are like grass, and all their glory is like the flowers of the field. The grass withers and the flowers fall, because of the breath of the Lord blows on them. Surely the people are grass. The grass withers and the flowers fall, but the word of our God stands forever. You who bring good tidings to Zion, go up on a high mountain. You who bring good tidings to Jerusalem, lift up your voice with a shout. Lift it up, do not be afraid. Say to the towns of Judah, here is your God. See, the sovereign Lord comes with power, and his arm rules for him. See, his reward is with him, and his recompense accompanies him. He tends his flock like a shepherd. He gathers the lambs in his arms and carries them close to his heart. He gently leads those that have young. Who has measured the waters in the hollow of his hand, or with the breadth of his hand marked off the heavens? Who has held the dust of the earth in a basket, or weighed the mountains on the scales and the hills in a balance? Who has understood the mind of the Lord, or instructed him as his counselor? Whom did the Lord consult to enlighten him, and who taught him the right way? Who was it that taught him knowledge or showed him the path of understanding? Surely the nations are like a drop in a bucket. They are regarded as dust on the scales. He weighs the islands as though they were fine dust. Lebanon is not sufficient for altar fires, nor its animals enough for burnt offerings. Before him all the nations are as nothing. They are regarded by him as worthless and less than nothing. To whom then will you compare God? What image will you compare him to? As for an idol, a craftsman casts it, and a goldsmith overlays it with gold and fashions silver chains for it. A man too poor to present such an offering selects wood that will not rot. He looks for a skilled craftsman to set up an idol that will not topple. Do you not know? Have you not heard? Has it not been told you from the beginning? Have you not understood since the earth was founded? He sits enthroned above the circle of the earth, and its people are like grasshoppers. He stretches out the heavens like a canopy and spreads them out like a tent to live in. He brings princes to naught and reduces the rulers of this world to nothing. No sooner are they planted, no sooner are they sown, no sooner do they take root in the ground than he blows on them and they wither, and a whirlwind sweeps them away like chaff. To whom will you compare me? Or who is my equal, says the Holy One? Lift your eyes and look to the heavens. Who created all these? He who brings out the starry host one by one and calls them each by name. Because of his great power and mighty strength, not one of them is missing. Why do you say, O Jacob, and complain, O Israel? My way is hidden from the Lord. My cause is disregarded by my God. Do you not know? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He will not grow tired or weary, and his understanding no one can fathom. He gives strength to the weary and increases the power of the weak. Even youths grow tired and weary, and young men stumble and fall. But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint. Praise be to God. It's a few years since I preached here at Penrallt. Seven, I think. It's my 7 years in the wilderness have given me plenty of time to think and to, unfortunately, not to come up with any answers, but to certainly be puzzled and to be mystified by a number of things around us. And I guess from some of the things that we've already heard in the prayers tonight, you share some of those, that puzzlement. And I think there are some things in this chapter from Isaiah which can perhaps help us go beyond that puzzlement and give us some sense of hope in a world that's increasingly difficult to understand and to make sense of. Surely the nations are like a drop in a bucket, dust on the scales. Have there ever, when I was preparing this, there were even less ceasefires than there are today. The Gaza was still going on, and Ukraine, trouble in Iraq, of course, Afghanistan, and probably there are many, many more if one had the time and energy to go through all the different places around the world. Some of them carry on even though they don't make the front or even the middle pages of our newspapers. And I guess one of the things that really puzzles me so much is this contrast between all these different war zones. And yet our growing ability, it seems, to control and understand so much of creation with an apparent sophistication and maturity. I should tell you that this puzzlement sort of normally happens between about 10 and half past 10 at night in the evening. This is one of the times my wife will tell you that my eyes might just close. I'm still listening, obviously, but you know, I sort of wake up intermittently during the 10 o'clock news, and it all gets a bit muddled somehow. I get a bit confused as to exactly who's fighting who where and whose side we should be on, or maybe we're not. But what I do know is that the sort of things that we're seeing conflicts which are affecting whole populations. This is not war in some battlefield set up over there somewhere. We heard this morning about David and Goliath. You know, it seemed, what a good way to fight a war, it seemed. You know, sort of have one from each side, sort it out. No, this is not that sort of war, is it? This is whole cities, whole towns being targeted and destroyed, and yet people still trying to live and to make bread and to sell things at the market. It's strange. And it's okay, sometimes it seems for us, because it's over there somewhere. It doesn't affect us directly, but gosh, does it affect the people who live there? And then, of course, who couldn't be just sickened and upset, you know, by the stories of the execution of the American journalists, the hostages, and the threat of further executions. And yet, it's interesting to hear some of the coverage of that. I mean, one, it's really bad because it's a British person doing it, or a person with an English accent, we should say. And it's really awful because of the means. And it's called, people say it's a medieval form of execution. It's worth pointing out that in Saudi Arabia, who I think we're meant to be friends with, just in August, 22 people have been beheaded. You know, that's their sort of process. And maybe what we should be really upset about, I guess, is the injustice, the inhumanity. Listening to the radio, somebody was saying, we should sort them out, we should go in and crush them. You know, as if somehow 800 years of history, you know, we've been going to Iraq and the Levant on crusades, Christianity battling their way against Islam for so many years, and we don't seem to have found a way of coexisting in the way that I'm sure our Lord would want us to. But it struck me also that we're sickened by a medieval form of killing, and yet, what's a modern form of killing? Well, apparently, I can't swear that this is absolutely true, but in Gaza, people receive text messages. And the text message says, your house is about to be bombed. You know, maybe that's a modern way. We certainly seem to prefer modern ways that seem impersonal. You know, the drone that drops the bomb. And of course, our high-tech world means that potentially we can see these events in our living rooms before we switch channels to watch something more palatable. And just puzzle about whose side should we be on? Who is it that we've given arms to? I think now, if I get it right, that Iran are also against ISIL, the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant. And so we may be working with Iran against them, but as long as we can agree about Syria, because they're on the other side in Syria, it gets very complicated to know just who's who and what's what. So there's one bit of puzzle. Another, it comes back to this idea, well, what's a nation? You know, the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, you know, is this a new nation? And we think of nationhood. What, in a couple of weeks, Scotland may leave the United Kingdom, may vote on whether it or not it should leave the United Kingdom. And what is a nation? Well, the dictionary says it's a community of people of mainly common descent, history, language, forming a state or inhabiting a territory. What is it that people have in common? And just over these last few years, nations seem to have changed so much. One of my hobbies as a young boy many, many years ago was stamp collecting. And this was great because you had this sort of stamp album and you stuck your stamps in and you learned so much about, you know, flags of different countries and different nations and all that. It's completely useless knowledge now because they've all changed. You know, even but Czechoslovakia doesn't exist. Serbia and Montenegro, Yugoslavia all broke up. Russia, Ukraine, bits of Ukraine going here. It's really hard to keep up. And what do we pray for? I remember a few years ago now, along with other Christians, being really concerned about the plight of Christians behind the Iron Curtain and the way in which they were persecuted. And I remember from a book I read at the time, this amazing story about a pastor there, and he told the story of how they were meeting like this one evening, and suddenly an armed soldier burst in, machine gun. And he said, right, those of you who want to can leave. Those who are real Christians, stay here. A few left. And then when they had left, the army officer put his gun down and said, I just wanted to worship tonight with real Christians. You know? What faith? What, you know? Anyway, that was then. The Berlin Wall came down, the Iron Curtain was broken. But that's worked well in some places, but it's obviously led to many difficulties of nationality and ethnicity in others. What do we pray for? It's really hard to know what we should pray for. Sometimes we just don't seem to know who are the good guys. And before we start thinking that we're sort of somehow more virtuous in all this, I was in Galway during the week and just going for a walk around the town, and there was a blue plaque outside a house. And it said something like, I can't remember the exact name, but it was something like, Michael Walsh was murdered here by the Black and Tans, June the something, 1920. You know? These things, we say that they're part of war, but, you know, they're not just something that happens in other countries, other sorts of people. It's not something we can just distance from ourselves. Because with all our maturity and sophistication and our culture, maybe we try and kid ourselves that we're so somehow different. That it is, as I've been trying to say, a puzzle. How can people behave in that way? But I guess what strikes me over and over again is that if you scratch the surface of each of us, what lies beneath? Again, another puzzle over these 7 years, but particularly the last year or two, has been about the heroes, the great and the good, the revelations. Those people from certainly from my childhood that I admired, who I thought were doing great things. I've got a personal interest here, I should say. Exhibit one. It's a self-portrait of Rolf Harris, signed. My inheritance gone. Worthless, it seems. So many, the great and the good. Rolf Harris did fantastic work for physically handicapped and able-bodied youth clubs, as they were called. You know, gave a lot of time. You know, we don't. And yet, he, like so many others, apparently was deeply flawed. But I guess what strikes me again and again is we are all flawed. Some of us perhaps have been flawed in ways that come under the legal system, but all of us are flawed in God's eyes. Are all our actions, words, thoughts, desires fit to be paraded before our peers? Who can say that they are? Sometimes we like to sort of embody pure evil. And perhaps when we look at some of the things that we read about, we say, well, you know, that person, it's really hard to see the good in them. And we do this on a nation level, and perhaps that's one of the mistakes we make. We think that we get rid of one person, the Saddam Hussein or whoever, and then everything will be all right. I don't know whether when you go for a job interview, you have to fill in one of these forms and they ask you about your strengths and your weaknesses. Always good to know, have some weaknesses to write down. One of my favourite ones is, if anything, I tend to work too hard. It's amazing how many people have said that in their application forms, and it doesn't quite turn out to be the reality. A bit like the one about, I'm really good at statistics, that turns out when they collect lots of data that they weren't really. But my fault, the one I put down, is that I can see the good in others. I can always see the other side. So I find it really hard to see anybody as pure evil. Because I can always see how, well, you know, the things that might have led to that. I don't know whether, I think that's a good thing. Because I know that God can see beyond our flaws. And he can see how we are his children, despite the things that we do that must cause him to weep. And if that's at an individual, personal level, I think it's true also at a national level. The nations reflect our own nature. That we've got this veneer of civilization. It's fantastic. You know, when you think of libraries full of books, or rather clouds full of images and materials. Amazing things. Amazing music, art, culture, literature. All that comes from us, the human race. And yet at the same time, those awful things that we've been talking about come from the human race too. You know, that's the thing. And sometimes, perhaps, we dress up ourselves with this sophistication that we lose sight of the fact that so often just beneath the surface is self-centeredness and self-interest and greed and all the other awful things that turn our world into the place that it is. So, what are we to learn from all this? Well, firstly, that the current order isn't permanent or fixed. Nations will come and go, as will their rulers. We must pray for peace. We must pray for mutual understanding, for nations to work together. There's this real risk that different groups will sort of split off more and more because we've got this desire to make it them and us. Us, our small group, them are different somehow from us. And we've got to break those down. We've got to get nations to work together against some of the common enemies of mankind. Things about health issues across the world, climate change and so on. How we're to use the earth's resources. And then the second thing I think we need to learn is that each of us, of course, is very small in the great order of things. In the reading, we're compared to grasshoppers. In another version, it's ants. I'm not quite sure which I prefer, actually, grasshoppers. I sort of had a sense of ants, you know, working together can actually achieve quite a lot. Well, other people may be much more expert on grasshoppers than I am, but Wikipedia wasn't much help on this. But all I could come up with grasshoppers was that together they can make an awful lot of noise. Concerted effort. Yes, like grass, our life is short. But remember, we can flower gloriously. That one beautiful bloom that lifts the heart, the field of flowers together, swaying gently in the wind. There is a point to it all, and that is it. For one brief moment, because that's what our life is, to flower and to flourish magnificently, gloriously. And then, as we come to the end of the chapter, there's that wonderful promise for those who put their hope in the Lord to rise above the troubled, the tormented, the strife-riven, the sordid, the corrupt, the greedy, the selfish world that we've played our part with the rest of humankind in creating from God's beautiful template. What a mess we've made of this world. But God, our Father, gives us that hope to rise above, to soar on wings of eagles. And that promise in some way beyond our human understanding to be part of God's enduring love. And then to mix metaphors, as this chapter does, you know, grasshoppers, eagles, lambs. But what a wonderful picture we saw earlier. The lamb carried in his arms, close to his heart, safe, enveloped in love. Today, tomorrow, for all time.